This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, hundreds of thousands of COVID-19 patients have been hospitalized. We'll talk about what some of the long-lasting impacts might be and what recovery might look like for them. But first, it's time to check in on the state of science.
This is KERA
for WWNO,
St. Louis Public Radio,
Iowa Public Radio News.
Local science stories of national significance. Last month, a federal judge ruled a popular group of herbicides can no longer be used by farmers. This is considered a win for environmentalists. These are strong chemicals and have the tendency to stray from where they're sprayed. But some farmers say this ruling is a slap in the face for them, and a bureaucratic nightmare has ensued since. Here with us to talk about this story is Christina Stella, Harvest public media reporter for NET. That's Nebraska's public media service. She's based in Lincoln, Nebraska. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me, Ira.
Let's begin with what herbicides. What are the herbicides that are affected by this ruling?
The three chemicals that have been affected are Engenia, Xtendimax, and Fexapam, which are three popular dicamba herbicides.
So walk us through what the big deal is about the dicamba herbicides.
Yeah, so dicamba is a very common chemical found in herbicides that a lot of farmers use on their fields to control their weeds. It's actually been around for several decades and was developed in what some experts call a golden age of agricultural innovation in the post-war era. And so while dicamba played a key role in the rise of industrialized agriculture, there are also some concerns that the chemical can be harmful to native plants and grasses, and that its use contributes to weed resistance.
Mm-hmm. And tell us what the ruling was and how it affects that.
So the judge made the decision for several different reasons. The ruling effectively removed the label for use off of those chemicals. And so the judge agreed with the plaintiffs that the registration of the chemicals violated certain federal environmental law and also didn't really acknowledge different risks that the dicamba products pose to the environment and farmers' livelihoods.
Monsanto plays a role here too, doesn't it?
So Monsanto developed one of those dicamba systems that was banned, the Xtendimax system, which something like 60 to 75% of soybean farmers have switched to over the past few years. So it's a very widespread product. Now, the issue with it is dicamba usage has caused tensions in a lot of different farming communities across the country because of something called dicamba drift. Now, during spraying season, farmers have to be really careful when they're applying those chemicals. You have to have the right equipment to do the job safely. The wind speeds has to be right, the temperature, or else that product can drift over to your neighbor's property and it can wipe out their crops. And that's a pretty devastating financial risk. One of the farmers that I spoke to explained to me that sometimes if there's an accident, neighbors will try to work it out amongst themselves. But plenty of other times, farmers have a hard time putting in a complaint to the state and getting a restitution for that loss. So, you know, in one extreme case that comes to mind, a farmer shot and killed his neighbor over dicamba drift. So there's been a lot of tension there. And just a couple weeks ago, Bayer agreed to pay $400 million in dicamba drift settlements that they inherited from Monsanto when they purchased the company in 2018. So there is a history there, and a lot of people have been impacted by dicamba drift. And then to the monopoly point, because of that drift risk, a lot of farmers have felt pressured to purchase the Xtend package from Monsanto, which would, you know, have those dicamba-resistant seeds. So they eliminate potentially losing their crops if their neighbor makes a mistake. So in the eyes of the court, the EPA didn't take those social and economic risks into perspective, which, I mean, they're really tied up in each other in a lot of ways, and they didn't take that into account when approving the products for use.
So was this ruling a surprise to people you talked to?
Oh, yes. It caused quite a stir in the agricultural community. So, you know, plenty of people have been watching this case since the original lawsuit was filed in 2017. But what really surprised people was the timing. News of the decision broke in the midst of spraying season. So a lot of farmers had already started using these products, or they were about to. And that's difficult because producers make their chemical and seed decisions a while in advance, I mean, a year in advance. So for farmers like Tracy Zip, who I spoke to for the story, it was really destabilizing not to know whether she'd be able to protect her crops and potentially having to come up with a plan B completely on the fly. I think that was a really stressful situation for a lot of people to work through.
We have a little recording from Tracy Zip, who grows soybeans, corn, sorghum, and wheat in Nebraska. And this is what she said about the weeds.
They produce like 5 million seeds per plant. You can't let them grow in your field. So you have to walk in, chop them, carry them back out of the field, and burn them.
So it sounds like getting dicamba on her farm is a big deal for her.
Oh my gosh, yes. You know, she relies on those kinds of chemical tools to control weeds on her farm. And that's the norm in commercial agriculture. You know, as I said, those annual planting and resource decisions, they happen months in advance, and they really revolve around the question of, okay, what seed system am I going to use? What are my neighbors using? And what chemicals complement them? So if she truly had not been able to use those products this year that she had purchased, that she had spent thousands and thousands of dollars on, by the way, I can't imagine how she would have gone about hiring people on such short notice to weed thousands and thousands of acres by hand, especially in the middle of a pandemic. So I think that that's definitely something we talked about, too, that there this year in particular, there was that added stressor there. And, you know, in a world where those herbicide options are already dwindling because more and more weeds are becoming resistant to various chemicals, farmers are very anxious to make sure that they can use what works for as long as they can. So it's definitely a big deal to them.
And it sounds like a lot of the states didn't know how to respond to this ruling, and there's sort of a jumble of responses.
Yes. You know, the decision, it confused a lot of state agriculture departments because, you know, the way it works, these products, they have a federal label for use, and then they also have a state label. So even though the ruling was, effective immediately per the court, a lot of local departments said, okay, well, hold on now. These products are certified for use in our state through the end of the year. We're going to honor that labeling. We're going to continue to allow people to use them until the EPA provides more guidance for us. And the agency did, after a few days, issue a cancel order for those products, you know, meaning you can't buy or sell them anymore. But, and farmers were happy about this, they were still allowed to use whatever they had already purchased through the end of July, which is when most people would be done spraying anyways. So that was kind of how they softened that decision for farmers.
Do you get the sense that there is this tension? I mean, I get that sense between farmers and agencies like the EPA.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously farmers are not, they're not a monolith, but I do think it's fair to say that a lot of commodity farmers are sensitive to this kind of federal intervention because they see it as a financial risk for them not to have those tools. You know, there's a lot of pressure on farmers to maximize their production, to increase that yield as much as possible because commodity prices are so low, and they really have to produce as much as possible to sustain themselves financially. And in this case, there was a perception among some that the courts and agencies like the EPA were almost like playing around with their livelihoods by making the decision, particularly at the time that they did. And so I really get the impression that it was seen as inconsiderate and kind of stemming from a misunderstanding of, you know, farmers' time and schedules and the labor that goes into making these decisions.
Could we see this reversal of what herbicides are approved for use? Could we see this extending to other herbicides or that farmers might be using?
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly possible this ruling could play into the court's decision in future cases because it could be used as precedent. But interestingly, Bayer, Corteva, and BASF, which produce the three dicamba herbicides that were just banned, they actually have appealed that ruling. So the dicamba saga is not fully over yet, but this very well could create a window for future similar cases.
And I guess if farmers feel that they look down the road and they see there might be similar cases and it really has upset their farming system of using chemicals, maybe they're finding non-chemical ways of dealing with the weeds.
Yeah. I mean, I think that right now in the United States, farmers in the United States are still very much operating under the system of, okay, what chemical system am I going to use? But depending on how many lawsuits we see in the timeline of decisions, yes, that absolutely could be a question that they are forced to confront sooner rather than later within the next decade or so, I would say. You know, there are already those mounting questions about weed management. And in other countries, farmers have already been forced to address that question. So in Australia, for example, they're some years ahead of us in terms of herbicide resistance. So people have had to invest in machines like an attachment to the combine that destroys weed seeds or collects them. And they have those in addition to using the herbicides that still work for them. Given my conversations with Bob Hartzler at Iowa State, who's a weed specialist, we won't see a situation where there's no herbicides being used, at least not anytime soon. But they will need to start adding other tools and methods on to sort of compensate and extend the life of the herbicides that still work. And in other countries, you know, farmers have had success with that. So in his words, the outlook is not total doom and gloom for producers, but it is a shift that will have to happen in the States eventually.
I guess you have to plant the seeds with farmers about that because they may not be so in favor of that kind of solution.
It's interesting you say that because in Bob Hartzler's view, farmers are not going to want to make that change because more than anything else, it's just a significant investment. It's a pretty big change in the way that they're used to doing their work. And I think that in a lot of cases, to switch over to this technology, I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in new equipment. But again, producers are resilient people. And from what I've been told, one day they're not going to have a choice.
That's all the time we have for now. I'd like to thank my guest, Christina Stella, the Harvest Public Media Reporter for NET, Nebraska's public media service. She's based in Lincoln, Nebraska. Thank you, Christina, for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.